The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Now, tomorrow will mark 1 year since the Hamas-led attack on Israel, in which 1,200 Israelis were killed and some 250 people, including men, women and children, were taken hostage. Israel's subsequent response to the escalating violence spread to Iran, to Lebanon, and is now destabilizing much of the Middle East. So what hope is there for any sort of a cessation of hostilities? What are the implications for the Irish peacekeepers in the region and for the people living there who have been caught up in this conflict? Joining me, a number of guests over the next 20 minutes, starting with Etty Higgins, the UNICEF Deputy Representative in Lebanon. Good morning to you, Etty, and thanks a million for joining us. A very heavy bombardment by Israel in the region last night. Can you give us some sense of the scale of the damage and the impact that it's having on the people living there?
Good morning, Sean. Indeed, I think it was the heaviest night of bombardment yet that we've seen in Beirut in particular. I don't think anyone got any sleep at all. And in fact, many thousands of people are now fleeing or were forced to flee in the middle of the night last night to flee the bombardment. I think there was over 30 airstrikes in total on the southern suburbs. We had the explosions continuing. I know that I've never heard anything like this from about 1:30 onwards. It was just consecutively exploding. We understand there was some fuel stations that were hit as well. So this resulted in the displacement of thousands of people and the destruction, of course, of homes. This morning, we're getting reports from our partners around the Sabra and Tequila refugee camps, Palestinian refugee camps, that thousands have fled from there. And these are places that are highly, highly congested with very, very narrow alleyways. They don't have roads. And this is just more now on top of what has been an absolutely indescribable humanitarian catastrophe in Lebanon over the past 2 weeks. And I can tell you, just as I was waiting to come on air in the last few minutes, we've had evacuation orders for 25 more villages in the south of Lebanon, towns and villages, bringing the total number of villages and towns to over 100 that have been told to evacuate because they are at risk of bombardment. So the humanitarian situation now, we have over 1.2 million people that have been displaced. And as UNICEF, we're obviously extremely concerned for the children amongst this population. Close to 400,000 children have now been impacted.
And where are these people going? Is there somewhere safe for them to go? Because presumably a lot of people would have maybe flocked towards Beirut, but as you say, not a safe place to be at the moment either.
Indeed, they're seeking safety wherever they can find it. So originally, the original waves of displacement, people headed towards Beirut. But now we've seen the intensification. We've had the ninth consecutive night of bombardment on Beirut, not just on the southern suburbs, but also within Beirut itself over recent days. And this has meant that people are seeking, they're being moved two or three or four times. They're being forcibly displaced. The government is doing their best. But as we know, there has been a massive economic crisis in Lebanon over the past 5 years, and the government simply does not have the resources to be able to cope with the magnitude of this size. So shelters have been opened, schools have been turned into shelters, which means there's no schooling for any child in Lebanon now. We have at least 900 shelters opened, with many more needed because of the continuing displacement. Community centres, mosques, churches, schools, anywhere people have opened. Lebanese are as a society, are extremely generous and have opened up their homes as well. So as many as 200,000 are currently in these makeshift shelters and are fully reliant on assistance, humanitarian assistance, for water, food, healthcare, clothing, absolutely everything, because they were forced to flee at such short notice in many cases. So we're seeing a huge amount of trauma as well amongst those who have been displaced, and deep uncertainty and fear about everything, where their next meal will come from, and where they will move to next, because some of the shelters themselves, a shelter I was in yesterday, two buildings away, had an airstrike a few days beforehand. So the children yesterday were when a passenger, there's a few passenger flights flew over, they were putting their hands on their heads and running inside, saying they were afraid of even seeing planes in the sky anymore. So there is really a deep fear now across Lebanon that with this escalation and people just not knowing where it's going to go from here.
Yeah, and the sound of the drones, apparently, I've read, has been quite a precursor for some of these strikes, and very upsetting, and particularly for the children in the area. Just finally, Etty, Lebanon obviously is also home to a massive amount, I think 1.4 million Syrian refugees from previous crises. Have they anywhere to go? Have they been displaced in great numbers from what are quite often quite makeshift camps?
Yes, exactly, exactly. So the Syrian population in particular has also been impacted. And we continue to see many Syrians, Palestinians and Lebanese who are actually sleeping out in the open. They're sleeping under bridges on the sides of streets up until now. And we've been saying that for a week, but as soon as we find shelter for some, more are displaced. So it's really a crisis as well, given that Lebanon has been hosting over 1.2 million Syrians for over a decade. And as UNICEF, we've been trying to support with the education, with the water, with the healthcare, and distributing supplies as much as possible. But really, given the huge amount of need for Syrians and Lebanese and now Palestinians, all of the supplies that we had even pre-positioned with the risk of this crisis and conflict escalating, we have used all of them up already. This morning, we had a plane that finally came in after a lot of delays due to the bombing. Came in this morning with 25 metric tons of medical supplies. But given the attacks on health facilities and health workers across the country, we're really going to struggle to get this out, given the situation and the difficulties in access.
Etty Higgins, UNICEF Deputy Representative in Lebanon, thanks for joining us on the Anton Savage Show. And please do stay safe and mind yourself in a very difficult situation. I'm also joined on the line by Declan Power, Security Analyst. Declan, good morning to you. And we might start with the peacekeeping presence in Lebanon, because obviously there's about 350 Irish people involved in it. And they have been warned by Israel to abandon some of the security posts that are there, the UNIFIL organisation. That's a difficult one, isn't it? Because obviously we want to keep our peacekeepers safe, but moving peacekeepers out of a region historically has led to even worse events unfolding.
Yes, it should be understood by people listening to this, though, that there's a standard practice for people who are in conflict areas like this about sheltering in place, not just trained soldiers as ours are, but a whole variety of people who work in conflict areas, including unarmed civilian aid workers. You know, movement in the midst of conflict that's considered unnecessary is unwise. To move those troops from those posts, however, goes beyond just issues of safety. It would fly in the face of what UNIFIL are there to do, which is to observe, report, and therefore act as a limiting factor. It doesn't suit the Israelis to have them there. It doesn't suit Hezbollah either to have them there because of that role. And that's why they are pig in the middle. And that's why they have been able to limit the conflict over some 30-odd years. And to talk about evacuation now would be not just unseemly, but it would be a detrimental move in terms of trying to limit the carnage for civilians. And we should remember that this isn't the first time this has happened, that Irish troops have been there in the 90s when Israel bombarded the place in a very severe way called Operation Accountability, Operation Grapes of Wrath. There were a whole variety of other issues before that with regards to the previous invasions of Lebanon in the 1980s. And the other elements that we should keep in mind too is that the presence of the Irish isn't just a unilateral thing. They're part of an international team. Mm. And if we were to take unilateral steps, that would mean Ireland would be single-handedly undermining and sabotaging the whole UNIFIL mission. And for a country like ours that has invested so much time, energy, and indeed blood in trying to contribute to the stability and safety of civilians in South Lebanon, it would be a very retrograde step.
Looking a year on as we are from those initial Hamas-led attacks on Israel and everything that has happened since, I mean, I was reading this week about a theory in diplomacy that you need almost two powers in a region to offset each other and keep peace. And when we are seeing an Israel that doesn't seem to be beholden to the US anymore, at least diplomatically, or listening to them, is there any check that is there on Israel that we could look to say, well, look, that might provide some peace in the long term, or stop them from going and going even further and doing whatever they like, effectively?
Yeah, it's a good question, Sean. I get the point about the theory. I don't think this is going to be resolved by current theories or by conventional means in terms of managing Israel. People often invest too much expectation in terms of what the US could do to rein in Israel, and they forget that Israel does what Israel does. And we're talking about a country that, okay, I think it has a particularly out of control extremist government at the moment, but there is a vibrant civil society in Israel. We've seen examples of it down through the years, and I think ultimately that will be the secret to, or the key to unlocking this conflict, if you like. Because the Americans have oftentimes tried to rein in Israel before, or give them instructions that would limit the conflict. They did that, I think it was in the Six-Day War, and it led to the Israelis attacking a US Navy electronic eavesdropping ship in the Mediterranean, because they didn't want signal intelligence traffic getting back to the US, that they were overextending themselves and going beyond boundaries that had been agreed with the US, which led to the annexation of the Golan Heights in Syria. So I think people should keep that in mind. If there's a change, it remains to be seen who becomes president, but let's assume for a second, in the US, I mean, let's assume for a second it's Kamala Harris. I think what you would be likely to see would be Harris and her administration reaching out to the various civil society groups in Israel that are not happy with this government, and trying to create a coalition that would provide a counterbalance, and maybe even lead to the toppling from the inside out of by democratic means, I hasten to add, of Netanyahu's government. The idea, Israel is in a very strong position, and even if you turned off the spigot of US arms, Israel would still continue to prosecute operations at the level of which it is doing. Maybe the level of attrition might be reduced slightly, but we forget that Israel has its own munitions industry as well. We were customers of it up until not too long ago, as were a number of our European Union partners. So we need to be more agile and imaginative in how we look for a solution to the conflict within the international community. And as I say, I come back to the point, one key thing that could be form part of this is that Israel is still a democracy. That the Israeli people, I think, are the key to how this dynamic can change. And we can't forget that Israeli people are very annoyed with Netanyahu about his and his government's cavalier approach to bringing the hostages home. And I think therein lies some material to work with.
Yeah. Declan Power, security analyst, thanks a million for joining us this morning on the Anton Savage Show. I'm also joined by Hadil Kazaz, Oxford MENA Regional Director, a gender advisor based in Amman in Jordan. Hadil, thanks a million for joining us on the show this morning. One thing I wanted to get you about, because I know it's been a subject of your research, when we see the events we've seen over the past year in Palestine, in Gaza, and now in Lebanon as well, does this kind of violence disproportionately affect women and children?
Yes, absolutely. This is a type of suffering that we didn't see before in terms of longitude and in terms of intensity. We are talking about 2.1 million people who have been multiple times displaced, at least 6 to 7 times displaced. And we are talking about 80 to 90% of their homes have been demolished, people living in tents. And of course, this affects women and children more than anyone else, because women have to bear the difficulty of caring for a life in an inhuman situation where there is no access to food, water, shelter, medication, and with intense bombardment over the top of their heads.
Yeah.
We are also talking about
higher fatalities of children and women within the 50, almost 50,000 people are killed now in Gaza. At least 160,000 children. So this is a high number of fatalities amongst children. Women suffering is not foreseen before, as well as in general, civilians who are in unbearable situations.
What are you seeing in Jordan now, which I know has been the home to many Syrian refugees in some of the camps there? Are there more people fleeing the conflicts coming in? So we were just talking about some of the Syrian displaced in Lebanon. Are they now trying to flee into countries like Jordan that are a bit more stable?
Yes, I am in Jordan for work. I usually live in Palestine, in Ramallah. I am not responsible for following up the humanitarian situation in Jordan. So I'm sorry, I can't respond to this question.
No problem.
But what we are seeing now, I'm sorry for that, but what we are hearing from Lebanon, that our people are trying to flee from the southern Lebanon, going up to main cities, to the mountains, and from to Syria. I don't have any updates about numbers, but definitely what's happening in Lebanon is also a very rare situation and affecting many, many civilians. So we hear about at least 1 million people who are leaving the south towards the northern parts and the mountain parts in Lebanon.
Okay. Adil Kazaz, Oxfam MENA Regional Gender Advisor in Amman in Jordan. Thanks a million for joining us on the show this morning. And my apologies about the quality of that line. There's obviously quite a lot of people fleeing and being displaced across the region. And as you say, a year on from that initial conflict, which kicked everything off, it does seem like the stability of the Middle East is a very open question at the minute.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.